You're listening to a WebYeshiva.org podcast. Visit www.webyeshiva.org to take part in our fully interactive online yeshiva. Visit blog.webyeshiva.org for more free downloadable Torah content.
Hello, this is Ilana Goldstein Sachs of Web Yeshiva with this week's Supporting Actor of the Week podcast. For this week's podcast, we're actually going to have Supporting Actors of the Week podcast. We're going to look at actually three minor characters from Megillat Esther. As we approach Purim, I thought we'd look at a few of the characters from that book. In Megillat Esther, as you probably know, there are a lot of these names that are kind of mentioned in passing that kind of get blurred in our memory together with all of those Persian words that we don't really understand. So for example, in Perek Aleph, we're told that King Ahasuerus approaches his Chachamim to find out what he should do about his rebellious wife Vashti. And his Chachamim, who are Karshana, Sheitar, Admata, Tarshish, Maris, Marsina, Mimuchan, right? Listen to his woes. Lots of names there. We don't really have much to say about most of them, even the Midrash, which we've seen in other podcasts, on most of these particular characters don't really say very much, except for Mimuchan. And the reason for this is that Mimuchan actually goes on to say something. As opposed to the other characters, he actually plays a small role in the Megillah. And he says to the king, in Pasuk Tet Zayin, Vayomer Mimuchan lifnei ha-melech v'hasarim. Lo al ha-melech levado avta vashti ha-melka, ki al kol ha-sarim v'chol ha-amim asher b'chol medinot ha-melech ha-chashverosh. Ki yitzei dvar ha-melka al kol ha-nashim lahavzot ba'alehen b'ineihen. Ve'omram, ha-melech ha-chashverosh amar lahavi et vashti ha-melka lefanav v'lo va'a. V'hayom hazeh tomarna sarot paras u'madai asher shamu את דבר המלכה לכל שרי המלך, וכדאי ביזיון וקצף. אם על המלך טוב, יצא דבר המלכות מלפניו, ויכתב בדתי פרס ומדי ולא יעבור, אשר לא תבוא ושתי לפני המלך, אחשוורוש ומלכותה ייתן המלך לבריאותה הטובה ממנה. ונשמע פתגם המלך אשר יעשה בכל מלכותו כרבה היא, וכל אנשים ייתנו יקר לבעליהן מגדול ועד קטן. Right, this is the advice of Mimuchan, actually a fairly big speaking part for a very minor character, where he basically says that by refusing to come before the king, Queen Vashti has caused trouble not only for the king, but also for all of the men, all of the sarim, at least, in the kingdom, because she's the queen, after all. If she refuses to come before the king, then all the other women are going to follow her example, and they're going to refuse to obey their husbands, and this will cause all sorts of embarrassment to everybody. And therefore, Mimuchan advises his king, there should be two decrees, actually. One is that Vashti should no longer come before the king, which seems to me that she'll be banished. Of course, we all seem to learn in kindergarten that she is killed, which could be the case, but in all cases she is certainly banished to who knows where exactly. And the second decree is that throughout the land there should be a decree that all of the women should give yikar, kavod, honor to their husbands. And so the letters are sent out to all of the various states in Ahasuerus' kingdom, that all of the women should, all of the men should rule over their households, and the language of the house should be the language of the husband, right? Which is a way of course, keeping control, right, of what goes on in the household. That is the advice and the results of the advice of Mimuchan, right? End of Mimuchan's part. We don't really hear about him ever again. The Midrash famously says that Mimuchan was Haman. Right, that this this character over here who gives advice to the king was really Haman. Right, and reasons are given. Rashi explains, for example, why if Mimuchan was indeed Haman, why would he be called Mimuchan? And the answer given by Rashi, for example, is that he's Muchan the Poranut. Correction. The Gemara says that it's because he was Muchan the Poranut. Rashi explains Poranut means punishment. That Haman was kind of ready, right, preparing himself, almost destined for his own punishment, which of course comes at the end of the story. Poranut, of course, could be explained another way, which we will get to in a few moments. But first we have to understand, what is the Gemara saying when Haman and Memuchan are really the same person? It could be taken literally. Or, as we've often done in our various podcasts over the years, we could try to understand what the message of that statement in the Gemara might be. And in this case, I believe that the Gemara is basically calling us to do a very careful comparison of Haman and Memuchan. If you carefully look at these two characters, there's actually a lot in common between them. Although Haman, obviously, is a very major character in the story of Purim, whereas Memuchan is quite minor, it seems, anyway, in the course of the story, there's a lot to be compared between the two of them. First and foremost, of course, is that they both give advice to the king. And so I'd like to take a moment to see the parallels between them. So both of these men, as I've said, are advising the king, and they are both reacting to a wrongdoing, in quotation marks, of an individual, right? In Memuchan's case, he's giving advice to the king because of Vashti's refusal to come before the king. What should the king do about Vashti? And in the case of Haman, we're talking about the refusal of Mordechai to bow down. In response, right, and both of these advisors have to help the king, figure out what to do about these two individuals. Both, and the response of each of these of advisors is very similar. Both advisors, through their advice, generalize about entire populations, right? Memuchan, in his advice, makes the basic assumption that if Vashti did what she did, then all women of the kingdom will also disobey their husbands. Right? He takes the example of one individual woman and generalizes about all women. Similarly, Haman does the same thing about Mordechai, right? If Mordechai, who was a Jew, refused to bow down, so same way, all Jews will refuse to bow down, right? So this is a stereotyping, right? Entire populations are being sucked into a situation here because of the actions of individuals. Memuchan and Haman are also similar, not only in the content of what they're saying, which I just explained, but also in how they tell it to the king, like the way that they try to convince the king that this is, that their advice is the thing to do. And particularly, both of them play upon the insecurities of the king. In the case of Memuchan, right, and this is something I didn't really explain carefully before, Memuchan says that the reason why the king should want to make a decree that all women in the kingdom should have to obey their husbands is because in that way, right, by making this a very widespread decree and not just something pinpointed on the person of Vashti, this would be a way of making the king's power known throughout his realm. Right, Achashverosh, as is seen from the beginning of Perek Aleph, is a little bit insecure, right? He has this need to show his power. And there could be a lot analyzed on that, which we don't really have time to delve into at the moment. So Memuchan is playing on that. He knows that the king is insecure about his power, about his being in control or not. And he says this is a good way to have your power shown throughout the kingdom. And by that, he convinces Achashverosh that this is what has to be done, this is because it's in the best interest of the king, even though it seems that really it's in the best interest of Memuchan and the other Sarim, who are, after all, the ones who are worried that their wives are going to follow the example of the rebellious queen Vashti. So that's Memuchan, right? And Haman, of course, right, it's even more obvious. The whole thing that brings Haman to the king to begin with is the fact that Mordechai is showing a lack of respect to Haman, right? Everybody is bowing down to Haman, who has just been given a promotion recently, except for Mordechai. Mordechai refuses to bow down to Haman, right? There's nothing really involved with the king here. It's not like with Vashti, who actually did something to the king. Here, Mordechai refuses to bow down to Haman, and Haman kind of creates a situation where, once again, the king is thinking that it's in his best interest to get rid of Mordechai, where really Haman really cares about his own interests, but he's making the king think that it's in his best interest. And what is that? That, of course, is... maybe we should now take a look at what Haman himself says by saying that the Yehudim who are in your kingdom, right, kind of have their own ideas and they don't follow your laws, right? And so he says, it's in Perek Gimel, Pasuk... פסוק ח' ויאמר המן למלך אחשוורוש ישנו עם אחד מפוזר ומפורד בין העמים בכל מדינות מלכותך. Right, there's this nation that's scattered throughout your kingdom. ודתיהם שונות מכל עם ודתי המלך אינם עושים. Their religion is different than everybody else's, and they don't follow the rules of the king. ולמלך אין שווה להניחם. It's not worth it to you, אחשוורוש, to tolerate them. Im ha'lamelech tov yikatev le'abdam, right? And if it is agreed upon by the king, you should write that they should be destroyed, right? So Haman is taking a personal issue, right? That Mordechai does not bow down to him, and he says, you know, it's not worth your while, king, to let this guy hang around because he's different, he's dangerous, and he is he's something you don't want sticking around your kingdom, right? We all know that really Haman was cared about himself, not really so much about the king. So we see that both of them are playing upon the insecurities of Ahasuerush to get what they want for themselves, really, really not in the best interest of the king, or maybe it would be helpful to the king, but that certainly wasn't the reason that they came to give this advice to the king. So there's a real manipulativeness and both the part of Memuchan and Haman, doing things in a sneaky manner, in a backhanded manner, presenting it as one thing but really doing another thing. This is key to both the advice of both Haman and Memuchan. And of course, back to this idea that they were generalizing about populations. Both Haman and Memuchan do something that it goes even beyond manipulative. It goes to being really evil. One could even say that, you know, neither Vashti nor Mordechai deserved to be punished. But certainly, right, all of the Jews and all of the women don't deserve to be punished because of the actions of a particular individual. Memuchan is willing. He takes the actions of one and he spreads it out to the actions of the others in order to get to the alleged potential actions of the others in order to get what he wants. And Haman takes this undesired behavior of one individual, Mordechai, and he's willing to kill off all the Jews to kill Mordechai because that's what he personally wants. So we see that there are many parallels between the advice of Memuchan and the advice of Haman. What is the meaning of this? Right? What does this do for us in the Megillah? So first of all, right, I think it's important to point out that that both Haman and Memuchan, since they are so similar to one another, right, they are from the same mold. They both represent the Agagi, the Amaleki in the story, right? The manipulativeness, the taking advantage of populations that can't defend themselves, right? The Yehudim who don't have their own state, who are vulnerable, the women who are not empowered in the Megillah till perhaps a little bit at the end of the Megillah, who are also very vulnerable. These are all very Amaleki qualities, right? The nation who attacks from behind, who attacks the vulnerable, who attack in, you know, in a sneaky, cruel sort of way. Right? They represent the Amaleki in the story. So what the Megillah is doing by showing us Memuchan, before showing us Haman, is saying that, yes, this is a story about the Jews, and this is a story about someone who wanted to kill the Jews, but what the story is really about is the evil of Haman, rather than the particular story, right? It makes the evil of Amalek something broader than simply somebody who wants to kill the Jews. It makes the evil of Amalek that has to be eliminated, any evil that tries to get any vulnerable population to take advantage of any population, to harm any vulnerable population, that's the evil that needs to be eliminated. And by twinning, so to speak, Memuchan and Haman, the theme of the Megillah becomes that much broader. It makes the story of Purim something much broader and much more significant, in my mind, than simply yet another story of someone who wants to kill the Jews who did not succeed. This might explain, right, why in the Gemara we are told that even after all the other holidays no longer are needed, but that Purim will remain, right? Because and we know there are documentation. There's documentation of many other Purim-like stories, like where the Jews of a particular population were almost killed and then they were saved. But we don't celebrate those holidays. But here the Megillah tells us that this story is different because this story really is talking about something much broader than just yet another story of saving the Jews. Not to say that we shouldn't be, of course, grateful for that miracle that occurred to the Jews of Shushan so many years ago. But it's meant to tell us that it's that much broader. The broader lesson of Purim is that much greater. Now, I promised you that we were going to be learning about three minor characters, and so I'd like to switch now to two other minor characters who show up in the Megillah, that of Bigtan and Teresh. Right, Bigtan and Teresh appear. They're mentioned in two contexts in the Megillah, or in two places in the Megillah, in about the same thing. But the first time we hear about them is the end of Perek Bet. Bayamim ha'hem u'mordechai yoshev b'shar ha'melech. Katzaf Bigtan v'Teresh, shenei sarisei ha'melech mishomrei asaf, v'yivakshu lishloach yad b'melech ha'chashverosh. Mordechai is sitting in his place, his usual place, at the entrance, at the gate of the king, and two of the sarisim of the king, two of the eunuchs of the king, Bigtan and Teresh, who were among the guards of the gate, were plotting to kill the king. Vayivada hadavar leMordechai. Right, Mordechai hears about this; it became known to him. Vayaged leEsther haMalka. Vatomer Esther LaMelech b'shem Mordechai. He, Mordechai, who heard about it at the shahr, at the gate of the king, tells Esther, who is inside the palace. Esther tells the king in Mordechai's name. Vayivukash adavar vayimatze v'italu shnehem al etz v'yiketev v'sefer divrei yamim lifnei haMelech. The issue was investigated, and it was found this was true, and they were both hung upon trees as punishment, and it was written down in the chronicles of the king. Now, of course, the reason that we are told about all of this at the beginning of the story in Perek Bet is because later on in Perek Vav, when the king can't sleep, this piece of information is critical in terms of the moving along of the story. The king can't sleep, he brings a sefer zichronot, and he reads about this story, this incident of Mordechai saving his life from Bigtan and Teresh, who were trying to kill him. And that, of course, is what moves the story along, that the king wants to now honor Mordechai, and it's Haman who has to do the honoring, right? We all know the story, right? So part of it is just a plot device. We need to know about this now in order to appreciate what goes on later on. But this little incident with Bigtan and Teresh also serves another purpose, which is very similar to the purpose that Memuchan served, you know, in Perek Aleph. If Memuchan kind of symbolizes Haman, meaning the problem of the Megillah, the problem in Shushan, right, the evil that needs to be uprooted, then Bigtan and Teresh are symbolic again of Haman, but in this case of the solution to the problem, right? Mimuchan represents Haman, symbolizes Haman in his evil rise to power and when he's trying to do the bad. Bigtan and Teresh symbolize Haman in his downfall. How so? How does Haman eventually get caught, so to speak? How is he stopped? Well, because Mordechai was sitting b'shar HaMelech. We read at the beginning of Perek Dalet, U'Mordechai yada et kol asher na'asa, v'yikra Mordechai et begadav, v'ilbash sak v'efer, v'yetzei b'toch ha'ir, v'yizak zaka gadola umara. Mordechai yada everything that happened in Perek Gimel, right? The agreement between Haman and Achashverosh that the Jews should be killed. He cries out, he rents his garment, right, etc., etc. And then the rest of Perek Dalet is how Mordechai convinces Esther that she has to help save her people. Right, so already here we see parallels between this Bigtan Teresh story and the later story with Haman. There it says that Mordechai is sitting b'shar HaMelech, which is apparently where Mordechai hung out. He apparently had some role in the court of the king, which, it seems, is a very convenient place to find out all sorts of information of things that are going on. At the end of Perek Bet, he's the one who hears that Bigtan and Teresh are going to kill the king, right? Vayivada hadavar leMordechai, it says there. And here, Mordechai yada et kol asher na'asa, right? The same verb even, in a slightly different form. So once again, Mordechai picks up on this critical piece of information, and then he proceeds to go to Esther, who is now comfortably living in the palace as the queen, right? And he says to her, you have to go and speak to Achashverosh. You have to be the one to convince him not to kill the Jews. You have to reveal to him that you are a Yehudia, and you have to tell him not to do what he's planning on doing. Esther, of course, eventually, at first she doesn't want to do this. She says, I'm going to get killed trying to do this. But then she agrees that she has to do it, and she does it in her own way, right? She doesn't do it in the by marching up to the king and saying what she wants. She does it in a much more subtle way, which is apparently based on her understanding of her husband, the king, that she can't go straight up to him and tell him X, Y, Z. She has to do it in a much more subtle kind of way. And she succeeds in doing this. And what does she do? She, and again, this is, we're not going to go into this in detail here, although I do go into it in detail in previous podcasts, if you'd like to look them up. Esther basically convinces Achashverosh that Haman really is out for his own power, right, which, as we saw earlier, right, that really was Haman's motive in coming before the king and asking to kill the Jews. And she convinces him of this, also perhaps convincing Achashverosh that Haman was, you know, trying to take over the queen and not only the kingdom. The two kind of go hand in hand. And she basically reverses the sneaky doings of Haman. Haman tried to convince Achashverosh that he has to kill the Jews for his best interest, even though it was really in Haman's interest, whereas Esther convinces Achashverosh that he has to save the Jews, or actually that's not quite true, he has to inadvertently save the Jews by killing Haman because that was in his best interest. In other words, eliminating Haman is what he has to do for his best interest, and as a result, the Jews will also be saved. So that is the story of Haman, of course. So how does it work that Mordechai hears what's going on b'shar HaMelech at the gate of the king? He tells Esther, who is inside the palace. Esther speaks to the king. The matters progress, and the king eventually has Haman killed, which is, of course, exactly what happens with Bigtan and Teresh, right? There we are told, right, in a very concise manner, much more concise than the main story of the Megillah, Vayivada hadavar leMordechai, vayaged laEsther haMelkah, vatomer Esther leMelech b'shem Mordechai, vayivukash hadavar v'yimetze v'yitalu shneihem ha'aretz, right? Basically, what we have in the Bigtan and Teresh story is a condensed version of what happens later on. It's like a hint that this is going to be the solution to this evil that we saw in the in the person of Mimuchan, parallel to Haman, of course, this is going to be the solution to the problem. That somehow the fact that Mordechai is Bashar HaMelech and Esther is the queen now inside the palace, right? This is all being set up. The pieces are being set up in such a way that this is going to lead to the resolution, the positive resolution of the entire story. So in Prakim Aleph and Bet, which are basically the introduction to the main story of the Megillah, we have both the presentation of the problem in Shushan, right, the evil in the person of Haman, in the person of Mimuchan, hinting to Haman, and we have the resolution of the problem, a hint to how it's all going to resolve itself in the story of Bigtan and Teresh. And perhaps it also is meant to help us understand Perek Bet. Right? In Perek Bet, we have this very unclear situation, right? You have this Jewish woman who is now becoming the queen, right? Which is a kind of like iffy kind of position. And these two prakim kind of hint to us that in the end, this is what's going to save the day. This is what has to happen in order for the story later on to have a positive conclusion. And this is all hinted to in the story of Bigtan and Teresh. So here we have these minor characters, right? You have Mimuchan and we have Bigtan and Teresh, who kind of add color to the Megillah, and they certainly give us little details that are necessary in order to understand the later story, right? You know, that Vashti was kicked out and Esther became queen, and et cetera, and that, you know, Mordechai saved Achashverosh's life. But they also, beyond those details, give us symbolic understanding of the main part of the story, right? Mimuchan and Bigtan and Teresh help us understand on a much deeper level, on a symbolic level, the importance of the story, the famous story of Purim that we are going to read later on.